Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate podcast episode 41. In a week of not a lot of news, really, football terms. That would be an understatement. I can't even joke about it. We have got a hell of a lot to talk about today, not only with it being the majority taking part in a double game week, but we also have probably one of the biggest footballing stories in modern history, I'd say.
Ben Potter's been sacked.
Siegel Simon admits that he was wrong.
That would be the biggest story. So we'll call this the second biggest. Further built on today, I'd say that that story breaking at Stamford Bridge on a night that BBC are doing a panorama on Roman Abramovich. How about that? You know, the irony. But we have got a lot to talk about regarding that, because there is some news that came out in the last few hours regarding Chelsea's potential new ownership, which would completely contradict the whole story that's been put in place regarding Chelsea Football Club over the past week or so. So Jason's our own Chris Kamara tonight. He won't be partaking in all the conversations, but we will go to him every now and again when Man City score or have a chance. Or
I was going to say, you might as well loop the clip of him just saying, you're joining me when Man City are about to score or just have scored. So you might as well just record that now and just insert it when applicable, which will be about five or six times tonight.
Sounds like a bitter Norwich City fan to me.
Well, there's several of them, mate.
So yeah, Jason will be giving us updates on the Palace City game, of course. Kossi hoping for a Palace result, I'm sure. Not for Norwich's benefit, for his second team, which is now probably his first after another shambolic week.
Following Liverpool as well, it'll take me out of a depressive state of going to Carrow Road every other weekend. So yeah, come on, Palace.
Yes, correct. So let's get down to it then. We've got a lot to discuss, so I'm conscious we need to be fairly efficient. So what we're going to do is we're not going to start with the biggest talking point. Let's be fair, you know, of all the double game week teams, not many surprises in here. So I'd hope we could get through this fairly quickly until we do eventually land on Chelsea. And I will reiterate, not for match reasons do we want to get to Chelsea. You know, we've got a hell of a lot going on behind the scenes. So let's start with teams that we can breeze through pretty quickly. So let's go to Wolves first. Wolves facing Watford and Everton.
Oh, we're not starting at Carrow Road. What a shame.
No, definitely not.
I don't think we've started at Carrow Road all season, and that's not us talking. That's the fucking players, mate.
Wolves, 4-0 Watford and beating Everton 1-0. So, you know, two wins, nothing out of the ordinary. Looking like they're a bit, you know, back on track after a little bit of a wobble in the past few weeks. Cementing themselves, I'd say, firmly. Well, actually, let's ask this question. Have Wolves exceeded expectations this season?
Yes.
Seventh Agreed. In the table. Yes, they play two more games than Spurs. So Spurs could make that eighth spot. But with Spurs being bipolar, it seems, that looks like that could be no guarantee.
With Wolves, they've been a bit bipolar recently as well. Sort of like you're going back a few weeks, and as soon as Norwich beat them away, I was just like, well, Wolves that good? When we played them at home, I looked at them and I thought, well, they don't really... I didn't think that they're ever going to score. And then all of a sudden, they pick up a good few results. Obviously, the 4-0 win against Watford has given them a confidence boost for the next game, obviously, at the weekend. And yeah, fair play to them. They're fun to watch. Some of the goals, that lob, please, we just put like the next 20 minutes and just talking about how genius that was. But yeah, they're fun to watch. When they're not a bore draw, they're a fun team to watch. And some of the goals they score, you just know as soon as they get about 20 yards out and it's one of their Portuguese genius players that they've got, you just think, oh, that's going to end up top corner, isn't it?
I've got a big question, Jace, because it would be hard to say otherwise. And I would certainly say there's a strong, strong case for it, top three at least. Does Bruno Large warrant a consideration for manager of the season?
Bit of a tool. I mean, I said this last week about Southampton, didn't I? And if it, you know, if it wasn't for the big four clubs, Southampton probably should, and Hasenhüttl. I guess you could say yes on the basis that in the summer we were talking about Wolves' lack of transfer activity and all the talk was lack of investment and, you know, Adama Traore going out and Nuno leaving. And so there was a lot going on at the time. And you, when you look at, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but when you look at the fact that Wolves are at above, albeit, you know, by 10 points, you know, against a team like Aston Villa, for example, and Leicester, I include Leicester in that, you can, yeah, he does warrant recognition. He obviously came with a decent CV and a decent record in Portugal. So, yeah, taking top kind of four big club buyers glasses off, yeah, I think so.
I definitely think there's a top three argument there. I mean, as you say, they went through a transition. I don't think I've seen in a while, other than for the big teams, a manager perform so well in a first season. That's the biggie. You know, Wolves let go of a manager that they seemingly loved at times with Nuno. Obviously, no real big signings, I'd say, in the summer. Untested in what you would call a big league. No offence to the Portuguese league, but you would at times say that's at best a 3-4 team league. And to come in and currently sit above Spurs, yes, you could say Spurs are underachieving. But to be so close to West Ham and Man United, I think is what Wolves deserve credit for. Maybe not so much West Ham, because you could say that West Ham are overachieving. So there's another argument for manager of the season. But to be close to Man United and teams like that, you do start thinking whether he deserves an honourable mention. And for also coming into your first season and having one of the best defences in the league as well. So I think there's big credit there. And you could probably say now it would take a massive fall off a cliff for Wolves to lose 8th spot. So he would be in mind, and we will do our own little honorary awards come the end of the season, where we'll discuss best, you know, player of the season, manager of the season, and do a top three list and stuff like that. And I will say at the moment he is a shoo-in for top three for sure. So
did he spend any money over the summer?
I mean, it's a difficult thing, because you could argue that Wolves' squad has been heavily invested in over a couple of seasons, and he's not come into the worst squad I've ever seen, let's put it that way. But then again, at the same time, there was a lot of questions over which players would remain at Wolves. You know, you had Cody linked. If it wasn't for that poor season he had last year, you've got Ruben Neves looking like he was going to go somewhere. You had Raul Jimenez, who we didn't think was going to be a, you know, at that level of footballer again. He's had no Pedro Neto all season, arguably their best winger. But he seems to have made other players better, which is big credit.
I was going
to
say that.
Yeah. To shore up that defence is massive credit, because this wasn't a defence that last season was, you know, stopping goals. They finished 13th and conceded 52 goals last season. Fulham only conceded 53 in comparison. They went down. So to come in and do what he's done, I think it's massive credit to him, to be fair. And to put four past Watford, you know, who Roy Hodgson's been critiqued as really shoring up a back line and things like that, that's impressive.
Special mention to Jason for saying how Watford were going to shore up the defence as soon as Roy went there. So, yeah, fair play, Wolves. A low-scoring Wolves came in 4-0.
Hey, it's not for everyone. You know, Watford have done all right, and it takes a little while for Roy to shore up. And it was a team that, if that would have been on our prediction list, I wouldn't have been overly confident that Wolves would have turned them over like they did. So fair play to them. And obviously, I mean, to be honest, I expected those scorelines to be the other way around. I expected Everton to be the 4-0 and Watford to be the 1-0, to be honest.
Wouldn't be surprised. And obviously, we all know that obviously Cody is a big Scouser, and you see his goal celebration, you think, do you know what? This could be the first time that Everton get relegated in how many years? 60 years, 55 years or whatever? And that meant a lot to him, not just because of Wolves, but because of his Liverpool blood as well.
So, yeah, fair play. Good place to start with Wolves, because I do think they deserved a little mention there. And let's see how well they shape up in the remaining 10 games they've got for the season or so, and see whether we agree that he, you know, if he finishes in seventh, I think that's a big, big ask. And we're not even ruling out sixth yet, but, you know, I think they'd be happy with seventh or eighth, as they very well should be. Let's go. Let's mention the team that they faced then, because we talk about bipolar. Losing 4-0 to Wolves, and then they go and turn over Southampton 2-1. And we will talk about Southampton at some point in this segment as well, because my God, what a turnaround for them. Jason well and truly jinxed them, that's for sure. Obviously, we've already spoken about the Wolves 4-0 defeat, which I personally didn't see coming. But to then go to Southampton and turn them over. And I've got to be honest, a little mention as well to, I think I mentioned him earlier on in the season, and he hasn't really done anything since because he's been on the bench and things like that. But massive shout to Cucho. That's 3 goals in 3 games he's scored. And he's looking, you know, a tidy little player. Only 22 years of age. Got that Colombian flair to him.
He was going to say, he loves it, doesn't he? He's one of those players that he could be a huge crowd pleaser and a crowd favourite, because you see him after those goals and he was going straight up to the crowd saying, like, this is me, this is me. And you feed off that. Confidence goes like miles in that circumstance.
Yeah, no, he's looking tidy. And you know, I've got to be honest, Watford are up top. You know, when you think Saar, Dennis, Cucho, if he's on form, you know, they've got good, tidy attacking players. If Roy can just, as Jason said, I know we say it tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, it takes time. If he can keep them up and get that back line sorted, he's got a bit of ammunition, probably some of the best ammunition he's probably ever had in one of his squads, to be fair. Because I wouldn't say that's just a one-man attacking machine. It just depends on how many they can hold on to if they do stay up and teams come knocking for the likes of Saar or Dennis. But, yeah, good win. Needed. Because after that Wolves one, I've got to be honest, I thought, you know, that's not the best. But now they go into another week off the back of a Southampton 2-1 win. And you could probably say that's a 3 out of 6 points. It's not a bad turnaround in those two games, I'd say, for Watford.
But how many times do we turn up and just say, that's them dead and buried? Or the one result away from getting away from it. Obviously, we get on to Brentford in a bit. Obviously, I'm fully expected to get slated. But yeah, a couple of wins here and there, and Watford could be well in it. We were praising Burnley the other week, and they're back, like, straight back in it as well. But yeah, fair play to what Roy's done. As I say, after the 4-0 loss against Wolves, you'd have thought, that's them done. Southampton away, good home record. But look at them. That's what you want to see, fight, spirit.
So moving on to the team we just mentioned there, hardly bipolar for this one, because it has been, when we were talking about Southampton probably having manager of the season contention, is it a jinx of the FA Cup all of a sudden? Because you start to look at that now and think, hang on, where are your eyes? That is 3 defeats in a row against 3 teams that you would have thought, let's be fair, there wasn't any real big teams in there. I would have thought they would have got 3 points out of those 3 games minimum, with a few draws or a win, and to come away with none against teams that really they should be leading the pack on, Newcastle, Villa and Watford. You start to wonder now, is this that period where Southampton do start looking very shaky?
They shouldn't be. They've got a good manager. They've got a good squad of players. As I say, their home record's been absolutely unbelievable. Then all of a sudden we're talking about them after a loss at home against Newcastle and a loss at home against Watford. It's unbelievable. They took the lead against Newcastle. Home fans, obviously Newcastle are sort of like a sort of hatred team at the minute because of ownership and a bit of jealousy elsewhere. And their recent form has been good, but that shouldn't be intimidating for a team like Southampton. I say 25 minutes in, Armstrong takes the lead. They're playing well. 7 minutes later, it's 1-1. You think, well, what next?
Which one would affect them most? Do you think it's the 2 losses at home, or do you think the spanking from Aston Villa probably shook them up a little bit, because, you know, to lose two games at home like that, the Newcastle one, maybe I could understand at a push, you know, Newcastle, one of the best teams in form at the moment, which is, you know, crazy in itself. But to lose 2-1 at home to Watford and Newcastle and get spanked by Villa 4-0, who weren't in the best run of form anyway, I mean, where does that leave kind of, you know, Southampton have got Man City. If they go out of Man City against Man City, then you start to wonder if it's one of those ships that all of a sudden could start sinking and they find themselves finishing in the league table, sitting in, you know, 15th spot or something like that, when really it wasn't that long ago we were thinking they could be finishing 10th, if not 9th.
Watch them win the next two games. You know what I mean? The thing is, I don't think they'll necessarily be like deflated after those last few results. But you know, they're a team where we think, oh yeah, they're back where they belong. They're going to be downward spiral again. And then all of a sudden they'll win the next two games 2-0, 3-0.
I think also what you need to bear in mind is, obviously we used to joke about them being the kind of Jekyll and Hyde team and very up and down. I think a lot has to be said. We're now, what, middle of March? And Hasenhüttl's style of play demands a lot of his players. So I think it could also be a fitness thing. You're right, the FA Cup could be a distraction because, you know, this was a few years ago now, but back when Palace made the cup final 4 or 5 years ago, we literally became overnight, after getting to the quarterfinals, the worst team in, I think, Europe in terms of form for league form. And, you know, so it could be partially that, but I do think a lot of it will probably be down to play at that level consistently is hard work, especially with the, you know, the squad they've got.
I mean, if Southampton, you know, if they overcame the odds on BBC One and turned over Man City, do you think Southampton fans would take any position in the league table as long as it's not relegation to get to Wembley again?
100%.
I think so.
They'd bite your hand off right now.
I mean, they're one of the favourites to get relegated this season anyway. They are one, but we talked about Wolves exceeding expectations. Southampton are out of the blue, all of a sudden they strung a load of results together. But when they sold Vestergaard in the summer and they didn't really look like they replaced him, we were like, well, I certainly was. I was very vocal and adamant that they were actually going to go down, because for two seasons under Hasenhüttl, they did okay. Then they got a couple of games where they got absolutely battered. And then you just couldn't see them doing it again this year. But, you know, he's got results at the right times, isn't he? So,
well, let's talk about one of the teams that they faced then. We've obviously already discussed Watford, so you know where I'm going with this one. So we come to Newcastle. A good win, as we've already said, against Southampton away from home. Fair play to them. You know, I mean, it's they're calling it one of the worst games in the Premier League now when we're talking about Newcastle against Chelsea. I mean, everything wrong about football right there. So it hasn't got the, you know, the biggest fan base, should we say. You can see that going somewhere in the future. But let's be fair, on the pitch, I thought Newcastle gave Chelsea a good go. And if it wasn't for the old Kai again, rocking up in the final 2 minutes of the game, as he has done recently, Newcastle would have got an amazing draw, I would have said. I don't think they'll walk away too disheartened from that, to be honest.
That won't affect them whatsoever.
That's their first loss. Just to highlight, you talk about, I saw someone the other day, and I did initially, I've got to be honest, and I still don't agree with it, but I initially sort of, my ears pricked up and I thought, you what? When they said, is Eddie Howe in for a mention for one of the managers of the season? But when you look at it, just quickly, that was their first loss since the 8th of January. So you talk about form. I mean, I've got to be honest. I would have said there was no chance. I mean, I didn't have the biggest amount of faith in Eddie Howe anyway. But to come away since January and have your team sitting in 5th spot in the last 10 games only short of Liverpool, City, Arsenal and Chelsea. They're actually tied with Chelsea. That is pretty incredible because that team, in my opinion, is not worlds away from the team saw the sacking. So
I personally think he inherited a squad that was more than capable of staying up full stop. I think that the toxic atmosphere with the ownership and the previous manager, no matter what you think of Steve Bruce, was affecting it massively on the pitch, off the pitch, at home. Like every single factor about Newcastle was just toxic as hell. And I was always quite vocal with, well, Newcastle have spent money. I don't, you know, our fans are currently obviously really pissed off at the whole Delia Smith regime, but in all honesty, it's sort of like an honest ownership at least. But the fact that Newcastle then got someone in like Eddie Howe, we thought, really? Is he that good? However, he's turned Joel Linton into Claude Makélélé. He's got like, you know, brought in some good players. Obviously, some of them have been injured, so you can't really say that, oh, it's because you spent 100 million, like you allude to. But, you know, even if he's just lifted the place and, you know, given players the belief that they needed and were capable of, and look what he's done. So fair play to him. He's made us look a bit silly, to be honest.
They were without yesterday. And I saw like a load of like messages like, this game's going to be down to which Joel Linton shows up. And then to hear that he was injured, Isaac Hayden injured, Trippier injured, Callum Wilson always injured. It's more surprising to say he's fit. And to put in a performance like they did, they didn't even start St. Maximan either. And, you know, I mean, the first thing that I've got to, well, I guess we'd be rude not to mention it from a Newcastle perspective, remember, because we have got to talk about Chelsea, but we'll come to them last because obviously with the big topic. Two decisions in that game. First being the elbow from Kai Havertz on Dan Burn. I mean, I don't know what you think about that one. And then the penalty from Shalaba and the incompetence to not even, I mean, I say incompetent as if I'm surprised. And then you see everyone complaining about VAR and you just think that it's not the VAR that's in question here. The technology is showing everyone, showing us what we need to see to go, that's a blatant penalty.
If anything, at the minute, Newcastle are the only one that can rely on their trillionaire owners to bribe referees rather than Abramovich, who hasn't got access to his money at the minute. So, you know, you can't talk about corruption with VAR with the who's paying them off, because Chelsea actually can't afford it at the minute. But in all seriousness, it's becoming a talking point every single week. I don't know what you make of the elbow, but the penalty, I think we all said, how the hell has he got away with that?
Yeah, the penalty was blatant. It was ridiculous.
How that was given. I mean, how much of the shirt did he have in his hand? I mean, I don't know how he didn't give that a penalty. I mean, literally, he had hold of his shirt for a good 3 or 4 seconds. That was ridiculous. I mean, that to me is a clear and obvious error, which is surely what VAR was brought in for, to highlight when the ref misses something that is so clear and blatant.
And it seemed like Dan Burn's scar got worse and worse as the game went on as well, from that elbow. I don't know. You know, eventually it looked like he had a second head.
The elbow was a joke as well. At first, I was of the opinion of Micah Richards when he said, well, he didn't do it intentionally. He wasn't looking at him. And if you look at the replay, to be fair, it wasn't intentional. But the point is, leading with your elbow that high and leading in with your elbow like that is dangerous play and should have been. It should have been a red full stop. Again, I don't know how VAR, you know, maybe they saw the fact there was no eye contact and was like, well, he wasn't aiming for him. But it's not the point, is it? The way he's jumped up is dangerous play, and it's endangered a football player. So
you don't have to have eye contact when you're going in two-footed. You just need to be going in two-footed knee-high. Exactly. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
exactly. You know, dangerous play is dangerous play, regardless if you meet
him.
It's so... For me, the biggest bugbear of that, right, is I don't understand why we have VAR to help with the clear and obvious. They're two blatant, clear and obvious things that the ref's missed. And they've not stepped in. VAR has not stepped into the ref and said, they should at least be saying to him, oh, you need to have another look at that, at the very least. Or they need to the balls to say to him, that's a red.
And then VAR will come out and say,
well, we don't want to interfere in every single tiny decision. But well, why do you take half an hour to decide if someone's a millimetre offside, then you fuck with?
Well, yeah, and the problem is those two passages of play, you know, they potentially were game changers for either team, weren't they? So it's one of them. You know, like you say, we talk about offsides and they spend 3 or 4 minutes deliberating if, you know, my armpit hair is offside, but then they can't spend... If they reviewed both of those decisions, they'd come up with a decision in 5 seconds flat. I don't get it. But again, I'll reiterate, I don't think VAR is the problem. It's the people that are bloody operating it.
Yeah. Well, I've got a VAR decision to talk about in the second segment, that's for sure, when we talk about how long it takes to identify something that's clear and obvious. And I personally didn't see it as clear and obvious. I'm glad Cookie's not here because he'd think I'm being biased, but I thought it was a bit ridiculous. Let's go on to Villa first. Had a good week to begin with. Obviously turning over Leeds. Looking a bit strong off the back of that Southampton win as well from previous week. And then obviously they go and lose to West Ham. Probably a fair reflection, I'd say, of Aston Villa, those two results at the moment. Not quite there to be with their other claret rivals, but enough to turn over, you know, Leeds in comfortable fashion away from home, I add. Not for everyone, is it?
You said what? What?
No, don't worry. We're talking about Villa. Go on. I don't want to. I'm literally trying to keep you away from it. And then I go and, you know, drop a little
I'll be quick.
There
I'll be...
for you to start.
Again, you're just enjoying Coutinho's genius, aren't we? Again, like he's got another goal. Cash had a good performance against Leeds, a goal and an assist. And I think we all forgot that Chambers plays for Villa and scored a screamer as well. So
where has Callum Chambers come from? I mean, that is a ridiculous turnaround in form.
Where did that signing come from, full stop? But, you know, you look at him after his goal, he looks the happiest person in the world.
Villa have gone and picked up a bit of a, you know, a fluky transfer there, and he seems to be getting into that back line and disrupting the centre-back pair in my head as well, which I didn't see coming, and certainly didn't see Tyrone Mings being the survivor of that disruption either. I thought it'd be Konsa and Chambers, if anything, but...
I think everyone thought that. Like, Mings seems to be one of those players. I'm not a huge fan of his personally. However, he seems to be slated, play incredibly. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, he should be playing for England again. He got an assist at the weekend against Leeds as well. So, and kept a clean sheet. So he's sort of proven himself every single week. Again, I'm still not a fan of his, especially the Ipswich links. And I think he's very overrated. But he'll make me look silly again at the weekend.
No doubt. But no, I mean... Not a lot to say. As I say, it's pretty standard that those two results. Good enough to beat Leeds comfortably. Not quite there to beat West Ham. As for Leeds, however, before we come on to that, because I know this is where the Norwich conversation is going to start going, let's go over to Selhurst and find out from our Palace correspondent how Palace are faring up against Man City, because I've seen the ball rattle the post at one point during the game, and I'm seeing Jason's bum squeaking at every option, you know, and Palace got a throw in and he nearly come in his pants. So let's find out what exactly is going on.
Unbelievable, Jeff. Well, we're about 45 seconds until half time and City are on the ball. Now, look, City, no surprises, dominated possession. Palace have been pegged back. When Palace have had the opportunity to go forward, they've had two or three half-decent opportunities, nothing more than that. Could have, you know, if the quality of ball was better, could have scared City a little bit more. But generally speaking, as you say, the woodwork's been hit, I think, two or three times by City. So they've had lady luck there. We're now coming up to half-time, goal kick, so I think that'll be enough to see out the first half. But yeah, look, I mean, if you're Palace, you'd be happy with that. But I just think got to be a little bit careful in some of the spaces we're given City. But the longer the game goes on 0-0, as I say, if Palace get two or three of those half chances in the second half, on average, you'd like to think they'd at least take one of them. So Zaha, probably the best chance, had a typical cut-in shot a la Norwich that incidentally won goal of the month. That went just wide. But yeah, good value for 0-0. City will be disappointed not to be a goal up, but you know, if you're Palace, you take it. So
it's not just Palace, mate. It's, I think, half of Merseyside as well will be like absolutely buzzing at that half-time score.
How about the fact that João Cancelo looks like Man City's biggest threat in a team like that? You know, gets on the end of everything, doesn't he? If Haaland was at City, would you be 1-0 down by now?
I think we'd be about 3 or 4-0 down.
It's the big talking point, isn't it? Whether if they had that striker, and you know, we've got questions to ask of Mr. Guardiola if that ends up going south for him. I tell you that, because that could come back and bite him in the arse. Because you look at this game at the moment, and I'm sorry, but when you're having 14 goal attempts in the first half and only 4 on goal, you start to ask that question, didn't you?
Not being funny, he might still get away with it, obviously, or probably likely to get away with it because of the Liverpool. They're still ahead of Liverpool and they've still got to play each other. But they were 10 points clear and everyone was like saying, oh, Guardiola's a genius. He didn't even got a striker. He spent £100 million on a player that they didn't even need. And all of a sudden we're thinking, well, hang on a minute, is the striker going to cost you? You were 10 points clear the other week, mate.
I saw a little clip of Guardiola at about 35 minutes and he just looked like he knew they were... It was like he was already predicting they were going to struggle to break Palace. And I just wonder whether that sort of arrogance is going to come back once again and bite them in the arse, similar to the Champions League final. Big questions to ask regarding, you know, a top coach like Guardiola when they keep making decisions like that. So just to clarify, it is Palace 0, City 0. That's an incredible result for Palace in the first half. Shame they don't get any points for it. We'll see how it goes in the second half. So we've got 3 teams left, just in time for Jace to join us to discuss the big talking point. But before we do that, we've got to discuss Norwich and Leeds. So we'll try and make this as efficient as possible. But let's start with Leeds first then.
Don't need to spend too long on this, do we, lads?
No. So Leeds losing 3-0 to Villa, as we just mentioned. And then just when Norwich looked like they thought they had a point in the bag, they go and fuck it up.
In shocking style as well.
God dearie me.
Honestly, the thing is, you talk about Leeds. So let's go from the 22nd of January. So lost, drew, lost, 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 lost. Got Norwich at the weekend, lads.
Dr. Norwich.
Yeah, what's going to happen? Two 2-1 win. Yeah, yeah. Even though we've got Rafinha and obviously Bamford's back. Yeah, we're going to win this, aren't we? Oh, what, you conceded in the 89th minute? Don't worry, we've still got time to make them look like fucking mugs. Oh, just lob it up to Ben Gibson, who's what, 6'1", 6'2"? Stick the youngster on, who's about 5 inches shorter than him. He'll win the header anyway against that clown. But honestly, fuck off. It's such a joke. But yeah.
What's really annoying about Norwich?
Everything.
The fact they lost that game in that really nice away kit as well.
Touché, prick. I love that kit. I don't care what happens. But there was a couple of them. It leads in the first half. They should have had us dead and buried. So, yeah, going to the second half, there's no reason why we couldn't have given it a good fight, which is very, like, yeah, performance-wise, it's very few and far between. But the problem is with us, we've got Brandon Williams playing left-back and our fans absolutely love him, including myself, because he shows everything on the pitch apart from quality. He shows passion, he shows fight, he shows spirit, he shows appreciation to the crowd, he does everything. And if every single one of our players showed that commitment to the team, we'd be thinking, do you know what, we put a fight in. But if you look at his positioning, he's got so much to learn. And, you know, like I said, I don't dislike him at all, and I hate knocking him because he wears his heart on his sleeve. But the position that he's playing in, he's a right-footed player playing left-back, and he just gets caught time and time and time again. And we've got Janulis, one of our most expensive transfers ever, sitting on the bench, who's a natural left-back. But not being funny, if Ben Gibson's on the pitch and is slumped up to a player who's 5 inches shorter than him and he wins the header, knocking it on to Rafinha, one of Leeds' best players, and then the person who won the header, obviously Ben Gibson was, like, you know, running as fast as a fucking tractor to get back, and obviously the player who won the header against him ends up scoring the goal. Again, we deserve to lose it. The only thing I will say is we should have had a penalty in the first half. Ailing's challenge on Rasica was, like, well, you know, sort of like on his shin, really high, completely took them out, went to VAR.
No, mate, it's against Norwich. They're down anyway, so fuck them.
Penalty decision that we did get, rightly overturned. It was a dive. Even though if you look at Aylin's reaction to it, he looked gutted, but correct decision. The Bamford decision with offside, we all think that, well, we all know the rule itself is a fucking joke, but judging by the stupid rule, it was a goal. So no complaints with that other than the stupid rule. It's nothing to do with the officiating on the day.
It's just another one of those interfering with play. As far as I'm concerned, if the ball's going towards him, it's interfering with play.
Especially he's trying to play the ball.
Yeah.
And the reason why the defender is further back and winning that header is because he doesn't know that Bamford is offside. But yeah, I'm not making any excuses for us. You know, I'm extremely honest and extremely passionate about Slayton at the same time. But you've got to ask him. I think the Twitter is just full of asking questions of Weber. We had a bit of money to spend over the summer for the first time in our history, and the recruitment was absolutely terrible, shambolic, embarrassing, pathetic. How many more times do you want me to say it? You know what I mean? It's just extremely frustrating because fans are turning on each other. I had it myself the other day, but it's a fucking joke.
So we've got, obviously, that's Norwich's performance summed up. Obviously, with Leeds, we've spoken about the game. So the big question is now, you're looking at 15, 16, 17, 18 and 19. I mean, 19, Burnley are looking a little bit more, you know, in a stick of bother at the moment. And we will certainly get onto that in a moment. So let's talk about the three teams the two teams we have alluded to, with Everton slap bang in the middle of them. With that win with Leeds, that keeps them in 16th spot, but they've played three games more than Everton. Now, just briefly, Cos, where do you think Leeds could survive?
Not being funny, they narrowly won against us. And if you look at their record that I just read out, it's a shambles. But so was Brentford's before they played us. And what happened there? They go on to win two games in a row and they're looking, they're 15th. They've played exactly the same amount of games as Leeds with 4 points difference.
It's not the Messiah in charge though now. And I think Jason did allude to the fact that they looked slightly different under March. You know, they've changed a few things. Obviously, it's going to take time as Roy's finding out. But yeah, I don't think we can get too excited. You know, at the end of the day, this is the two teams that concede the most goals facing one another. And I don't think there's a lot to learn from that fixture against Norwich. They have got a big couple of games coming up. They've got Wolves, which, you know, Southampton at home. And then they've got the big one against Watford away, which could go anyway. So it's going to be a tough time.
You talk about fixtures and games in hand. If you look at Everton's running, you probably wouldn't give them a chance in the next four or five games or whatever it is. So if you look at the position of Brentford and Leeds, it could be the fact that you could look at the table right now and think, do you know what? When all teams are playing the same amount of games, that could be exactly the same. Maybe Burnley up maybe one or two places, or obviously two places going above Everton. But I think that the one team out of the teams that are currently not in the bottom three to worry about is that Everton, or not worry about, but I think they should be very worried, Everton. I really do. But yeah. I still think Brentford are going down, so whatever.
He's just sticking to his guns anyway now, isn't he? We will talk about them later as well as Everton in the second segment. Now, we did that pretty well. We moved on pretty quickly, and I'm conscious that obviously second half is due to start shortly.
Do you want me to mention Norwich-Chelsea very briefly?
No, not really.
I'll talk about it very quickly. I won't talk about...
Do what you want anyway, isn't it?
But yeah, I won't talk about the chants that the vile Chelsea fans were singing. I won't talk about the fights that I saw with my own eyes involving Chelsea fans again. We conceded the goal far too early, 2-0 down. When it was 2-1 with Pukki's penalty, I genuinely thought we were going to get back into that game 2-2. Laugh all you want, play it over the speakers. You know, I'll take it on the chin. But again, it was sort of like one of those things. All
bollocks, no dick.
Never heard it phrased like that, but fair. And obviously, we already mentioned that, you know, Chelsea were very I wouldn't say fortunate, that's the wrong word to use, but they weren't convincing against Newcastle. And I think Newcastle will deem themselves, you know, a tad unlucky in the end. Because I wouldn't say Chelsea dominated. They dominated possession, just story of their season, couldn't do anything with it. I mean, to have 73% possession against Newcastle and only have 8 attempts on goal, that's not the most, you know, convincing performance I've seen from a team that's meant to be at the beginning of the season challenging for a title, might I add. But Kai Havertz, last minute wonder again, that's now what, 5 goals in his last 3 games or something like that now, or 4 goals in his last 3 games. So he's becoming that big team player.
He's making Lukaku completely redundant, even more redundant than he already is. And
well, Lukaku didn't even start, might I add.
Yeah. And you look at the movement, if you look at the way that he plays with that Chelsea team, he's much, but even if you just play him as a central striker, he offers so, so much more than their £100 million man. So play Havertz and yeah, Chelsea are lucky to win. He's a great, great player.
So we're now at the end of that segment, but we will stay on Chelsea. This is almost going to be our replacement for Wheel of Wonder, because I think it's only right that we discuss this. So we'll try and discuss this as quick as possible before the game kicks off for Jace. We've got this big, obviously looming sanction that has happened, rightly so, for Roman Abramovich. You've got the irony that it was Chelsea Newcastle in a week that that happens as well. Now deemed one of the, you know, most unpopular fixtures in Premier League, just for what it stands for. We've got the Chelsea fans who are becoming more and more moronic every week. This isn't just a Chelsea slander for the next 15 minutes. This is a Premier League slander as much as Chelsea. I think I heard a great segment on TalkSport, very rare, I know, but they were saying there needs to be an inquest and there needs to be something in place where, you know, they've got the right to really, really question principles, because this just cannot be all about money, especially when we're seeing, you know, Chelsea come up with sanctions the past few weeks. Saudi Arabia executing 81 men in the past week.
Blood money left, right and centre. Oil money left, right and centre. Ties with, what can you say? Ties with disgusting governments, disgusting regimes. And yeah, but it doesn't matter for the Premier League because money's involved. That's my take on it.
No, absolutely. I mean, Jace, before the game kicks off, have you got any thoughts on Chelsea and the whole developments? Because obviously, you know, it depends how far back you want to go. Because obviously that announcement came into play just after we broadcasted our last episode. So, I mean, how do you see it all taking effect?
The reality is, I don't think Chelsea, in all honesty, are going to be... The headlines are quite dramatic. And I get, you know, at the moment, cash flow is going to be difficult in the short term, but the reality is someone will probably buy that club, and I think it'll ease itself out pretty quickly. I can't see there being a disaster. It could be famous last words, but I just don't see it. I think, and this hasn't been spoken about enough, but I think in the wider context of football and ownership and takeovers in the future, what this Chelsea situation does now is bring the Premier League's own fit and healthy owner test to a head, because Roman Abramovich has been sanctioned because of, okay, it's taken the war in Ukraine for that to happen. But the flip side, only recently, they accepted a Saudi Arabian bid from a consortium for Newcastle, and they've not been full of positive headlines. In fact, very similar to, you know, Abramovich, there's been, you know, accusations of links to, you know, Saudi government, and obviously they're at the moment kind of, you know, Yemen and all them, they're all at war as well.
It's going to get to a point where the post-match and pre-match interviews are always going to be about their owners. It's only going to be a matter of time until Pep Guardiola is going to be asked about it, and I think Thomas Tuchel has managed it very well by saying that, do you know what, Chelsea fans, I do not agree with your chants. Please shut up, basically, to focus on football. And then he's saying, well, I'm not a politician. And you think, well, he's not. And it's very difficult to be involved in a football club that is, like, there's so much going off, like, you know, on and off the pitch, that all of a sudden the managers are being spoken to as if they're the governing bodies for Premier League ownership, which it's wrong, but everyone can see it's that the situation and the regime is wrong.
Thomas Tuchel, I think, to be fair to him, has handled the whole situation brilliantly. I think being a manager in that situation, fair play to him. He's handled himself. You know, no PR professional can train you for the situation that those players find themselves in. But again, say if Chelsea faced the worst situation, unfathomably possible, that, you know, they get financial difficulty to the point they have to go into administration, even temporarily, for example, and then they face a points deduction going into next season. Are they not then at risk of turning around and saying, well, hang on a minute, should we not double check that Newcastle takeover that you accepted? Because I'm sure, like, this for me opens up a whole can of worms now on ownership in general. And I think there's going to be, for the Premier League going forward, they're going to have to look at the model that they have in place, because obviously they initially rejected the Saudi consortium's offer for Newcastle in the first place. Then it got accepted because supposedly there was sufficient proof that they weren't tied to X, Y, and Z, without getting into it, because I don't know, you know, the ins and outs of it. But this now, if Chelsea are punished in the most, like, unthinkable way that we ever thought could happen to any football club, or big football club, if they get punished in that way, there is every chance they probably will, because they'll be fighting for their futures, not only in the Premier League, but financially. They turn around to the Premier League and be like, right, be transparent about Newcastle then. Like, because if Chelsea have to be transparent, then it sets a precedent. Like, granted, at the moment, it's because of a situation that's ongoing in Ukraine. But then on the flip side, the situation in Yemen is ongoing and has been for, you know, for years, and that's linked to Saudi Arabia. So if there's any potential links there, it's...
And what Scott said, is I said about the public executions recently as well.
Yeah, that's
ongoing. That's just the way that they operate. So it's just like, well, okay, then what happens with Man City's owners next?
Everyone's going on about this Ukraine-Russia war, and rightly so. But the difference is, and what a lot of people are forgetting is, there's already been a huge war going on, as we say, with Yemen and in Iran. It's just the fact that this one's a little bit close to home. And I think we need to be aware of that, you know, this, people talk about a world war. Well, this war hasn't really even started yet. And you look at that one that's going on over there and the amount of deaths that are happening, you know, I think we just need to be a little bit mindful of that, just because it's not in Europe, and just because, you know, they're deemed, you know, not a third world countries or anything, far from it, one of them. But because it's in the middle of the deserts and whatnot, that we don't pay any attention to it. And, you know, I think if anything, that one's probably, as a war, it's worse at this moment in time. So for the Premier League to ignore that and then preach all this Ukraine stuff kind of contradicts itself massively.
It's very contradictory. I think what goes for it with Chelsea and their former owner is that he's pictured, there's, you know, look at his finances, look at the steel companies that he owned. If you look at everything, it directly, you know, there's videos, there's everything to do with it. That's what sort of, like, changes it. And I'm not saying it's right whatsoever, but that's the sort of changing factor between what's happening in the Middle East or whatever and what's happening currently in Europe. I think because he was directly, well, the funding, that you just read the news. But again, if you look at the ownership of Abramovich, when he first took over, I think everyone's seen the Sky Sports clip where one of the journalists on there basically explained why he took over Chelsea. And he basically said, Chelsea fans, you've got a criminal in charge now, and he's only using your club as a financial tie to have in the UK to basically, you know, to defraud his own nation and to defraud the rest of the world. And he spells it out for anyone who needs to know. And all of a sudden, funny enough,
it was Jim White sitting opposite him trying to gather momentum about how great this story is. And you've now got Jim White sitting on TalkSport saying how horrific it is with what Roman Abramovich has done. And it's
rather
like,
ironic.
You were part of that.
Do
you
remember?
Were part of why it was celebrated. Oh, look at all this money that's coming into football. Look how interesting our transfer window's going to be with my yellow tie on. I'm going to have loads of news to cover. That was all he cared about.
It's just self-importance, self-indulgence.
Self-indulgence.
And not being funny, it's sort of not necessarily the money side of it has ruined a lot of football fans' perception on the Premier League. And, you know, like with a club that I support, we get slated for this, slated for that. And it's thinking, well, if every team could be self-funded, that surely would make it a little bit more level playing field and a little bit more enjoyable for the masses, really. Not, right, some oligarch's, you know, some oligarch crook has decided to invest in a team and just spend billions and billions of pounds, and all Chelsea fans are saying,
"He loves the club."
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Seriously, get over yourselves.
I mean, there's big news, you know, in France at the moment to show like what's going on with Paris Saint-Germain at the moment, and you know,
well, Paris Saint-Germain is a prime example, right? They essentially sponsored themselves, didn't they, through their Qatari investment fund, from what I remember, to sign Neymar, because they had to have all the cash up front. Because in La Liga, you have to go to La Liga headquarters and present your release clause being met, don't you? And the way Paris Saint-Germain got around that is through a sponsorship time with the club. Similarly, I think, to City and Etihad and how that works. But obviously, that was a lot of money. And that's taken football. I think, I can't remember what I was watching the other day, but they were saying, you know, the likes of Paris Saint-Germain and the likes of Man City, they've taken football to a whole big money operation. It's not football. It's business, and it's not even about football. It's just them using a means to, you know, essentially kind of move, well, sports washing, as they call it in the press, isn't it?
If you look at the infrastructure, I'm not justifying Man City's owners whatsoever, but if you look at the infrastructure and what they've done to Manchester as a whole, they've improved that whole region. They've improved the academy that they're building for the future. Whereas if you look at what Chelsea have done, they just, like, you know, buy managers, sack managers, pay managers off, buy players, get rid of players, you know, sack players, whatever. They've got like, what, 40 odd players out on loan, and everything about that football club just reeks corrupt. And their fans, you see their fans anytime, I know, they all turn around and say, "Oh, all fans have got it." Okay, then why is it always Chelsea fans that we see on the news? Why is it always Chelsea fans that we see video clips of, you know, vile racism, vile chants, vile everything? And you just think, do you know what? Your owner shows how much you deserve to go in the shit. And I really hope they do, because they're vile. I think that video resurfaced recently of them, I don't know whereabouts they were, but they're outside a restaurant and they just trashed this guy's restaurant.
Yeah,
outside. And then you see this guy just punch this guy, and the guy who's working there just puts his hands up and says, "What?" And then he gets shoved, like a mob mentality. You just think, what the fuck is wrong with your fans? Seriously.
So just something we needed to talk about. I mean, you know, when the season ends, we're going to have a few bits and pieces that we can discuss without the pressures of having games on, because there's loads of different topics to discuss with the issues that Stoke City are finding at the moment with their Bet365 stadium. There's loads of different things we can come to, and no doubt it will be a topic of discussion because it will develop going into the summer for sure. Just before I go to predictions, however, Jace, I'm just going to come to you because there was a little bit of a scare in the Man City game.
They've hit the bar on the post again, which is about the fourth time this game. You start thinking, is it...
Good hand from Guita, though.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, very good save. Very good save. So,
half an hour, 31 minutes to go, plus injury time, but it's going to be a long old, you know, they're starting to really cover us now. So, that being said, it could suit our, you know, counter, but let's see.
We'll check in with you around the 70-minute mark for sure. So, predictions, let's get this out of the way. Let's see how the scores are going, because we're nearly coming to the end of, you know, the who's up or down. So this is where you're going to get your points. But the first game was Brentford-Burnley, which we will be talking about in a second. Two of us got it wrong, two of us got it right. Not the score exactly. Jason and Cookie get a point. They both said Brentford would win. Jason goes on to 46 points and Cookie goes on to 47, opening up a little bit of a gap at the bottom with Cossie on 44. We all thought Tottenham would beat Man United, and that
peer pressure made me think that. peer pressure made me think that.
Oh,
that
was, dearie
me. That was ultimate peer pressure with me. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. No, Spurs can't surely lose that. But we'll get onto that in a bit.
Yeah, we will. As will we all these games we're going to get onto in a bit, actually. Because the next one was Arsenal-Leicester. We all said Arsenal would win. But to sting a little bit for you boys at the bottom, Cookie got the exact score, which puts him on 50 points. Jason, you got 47. Costa, you got 45, because you both got that one right, as did I. I thought Arsenal would actually get a massive win there. Didn't end up being that. Puts me on 60. And finally, the final two single points go to Jason Costa for saying that Wolves would beat Everton. And to further add a bit of pain to that one, as I've just realised, I've nearly done you out here, Costa. But you actually got the exact score for Wolves. You said they would win 1-0, which is what they went and done. Which puts you, gives you actually a 3 points you really needed, to be fair. Puts you on 48, and Jason's also on 48 for getting the single point. So, Jason Cossie, 48, Cookie, 50, Scott, 60. That is how predictions look as of episode 41. So, second segment, let's quickly get through the teams we've briefly mentioned then from their perspective. One being Everton, where do we start? Probably don't need to say too much about that one, to be honest, because it's just a story of Everton's lives at the moment. And then obviously, you know, we had the, as we spoke about from Villa's perspective, we've got West Ham beating Aston Villa and how things are looking for them. So anything to mention regarding Everton and West Ham, Kos?
Everton are shit and West Ham... Again, sort of like up and down, really, aren't they? We all thought that they were going to potentially finish in the top four. They've still got an outside chance. However, we don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, like without just easily slating Everton, they look like they're in the shit, don't they? They really do. If you look at their last win was obviously Everton 3, Leeds 0, which, you know, Leeds beating Leeds is not for everyone, is it? Hey, Cossie. Oh, yeah, that's me. Fuck off, Norwich. But yeah, if you look at the next fixtures, what Newcastle at home, they've got to win that. If you've ever seen a must-win game, the cup they can pretty much forget about that. Not because they haven't got a chance against Crystal Palace, but they need to forget about that and focus on the league. But then you got West Ham away. Are they going to win that? I can't see it happening. And then they're playing Man United at home. Are they going to win that? Well, probably not. Then Liverpool. Away, I think they could start the game with a handicap of 4-0 and they'll probably still lose that, as well as Leicester, Brentford, then Arsenal as their remaining fixtures. Where's their next points coming from? When's their next win?
We said they've got the most difficult run in because it was only Newcastle and I think Brentford that were below 10th or something like that in regards to their fixtures. So they have got it. They've got it rough.
Because, games I mean, in hand mean fuck all.
Well, they've got a Burnley game to come, I think, if I remember rightly. That still hasn't cropped up for whatever reason. But absolutely, I struggle to see what Everton are going to do. I mean, I wouldn't even say that is the right time to be playing Newcastle either, to be fair.
People are saying that Everton too big to get relegated. Well, no.
No team
look
is.
At the position. Yeah, no team is. Look at the position that they are in. They are fucked. And I did put that bet on that you told me to do with Everton getting relegated. This is about two or three games ago. So, yeah, only a small amount of money, but it makes up for the fiver I put on Brentford when they were 12-1.
Well, I don't think people look that far ahead to the fixtures. And when you actually identify the fixtures that Everton have got, it's not good. West Ham, I think you're right. I think Arsenal... You know, it's theirs to lose. They are looking great at the moment, as we will talk about shortly. I can see West Ham, you know, holding their own in fifth or sixth because no one else seems to want it, do they, Spurs? But I think at the moment they'd be quite happy. But you just wonder whether all eyes are on that next severe fixture because, let's be fair, they'd win the Europa League, which isn't out of their reach, I will say. And they're in the Champions League. So why fight for fourth when you could win it that way? I mean, I think it's a long shot, but can't say that they haven't got a chance. They're in it at the end of the day. So we'll see. I guess I've got to come to it at some point, haven't I? So I might as well get it out of the way, because I don't really want to talk about it in too much detail, and I better talk about it while Jason can't talk. It was a good game for the neutral, I'm not going to lie. I'm still struggling to comprehend how we didn't win the game or get a draw at least, because we were in firm control at one point. We looked dangerous. But it's that man, isn't it? CR37, seven, that has come up with a hat-trick. And it was so good, Jace, to our disgust, it brought Tom Brady out of retirement. It was that good.
That was just a massive PR stunt waiting to happen, wasn't it?
But Man United, at the end of the day, you know, they won 3-2. As I say, good game for Sky Sports. I was livid. Cookie rightly summed it up, how have Spurs lost that game, in the fact that it firstly was Man United to begin with, who aren't in the best place at the moment. Mind you, I think people overlook their actual results and their points rather than the performance. It looked like it was ours to win at one point. I mean, we were 2-1 down and I had no worry.
Should have been, could have been. Yeah.
I thought, 100%. I even said at the beginning of the game, it's very rare I go into a game against a top team and I think we'd win this, worst case a draw. And to come away with no points was a bit sour for me. Big questions to be asked of, I will say, and I did say this to one of the guys that I was talking to in our little Spurs chat as such. The substitution from Conte, I've got to be honest, I feel was a mare. To take Kulusevski off, I think was wrong. And to bring Moira on, I think has caused us a bit of an issue. And once he went off, I couldn't see the creativity coming from anywhere, if I'm going to be honest. So, yeah, just a few questions to be asked. Positive news that Conte said in a public press conference he's staying. It looks like worst case scenario, Conte's going to be there or he's going to go to PSG and Poch is going to come back. That's the only two scenarios that I can see happening at the moment. Personally, I want Conte to stay. I think the Poch ship has sailed. I haven't seen anything from Poch over at PSG that makes me think we've let go of something. I'm not going to lie. I think the brand of football with Conte is slightly better. It was one thing with Poch that I still always said was a bit dire to watch at times, even though we had some great memories in the Champions League. But
Conte is just exciting, isn't he?
I like
him. He's a complete fruit loop and he's a very lovable guy. And you know that if you back him, but what he turns around and says, I'm not used to fighting for top four. I'm used to fighting for titles.
It's winning mentality. Enough.
That's got to be the owner's goal, to be like, do you know what? We're going to keep you. We're going to do everything we can to keep you happy and give you what you need to do this.
The big talking point for me that made me think Conte is going to stay is this week there were strong, well, it's only Monday, there were strong ties that PSG were trying to assign, were trying to snap up Paratici as a replacement for Leonardo. And it seems like Paratici has turned that down. Now, if Conte was going to go to PSG, I thought that would have been in place. So we'll see what happens. As for Man United, fifth spot, 50 points, three games off Arsenal on 51 points. They would have expected top four this season. They expected to win the league this season, which was even more embarrassing, might I remind them.
I take it you're going to put laughing audio over that, yeah?
I mean, let's just do it ourselves. It's hilarious. They're not getting fourth, are they?
No, they're not.
No. I think Spurs have got more of a chance of getting fourth than they have. And out of the three teams, to be honest, I'd rather Spurs get it over Arsenal and Man United.
Let's go on to the team that I think will obtain fourth and are looking brilliant. Just on that, I don't know if you've seen that, but I need to go to Jace just to see how on earth Man City have just not scored there. Instead, he is looking at his phone 24/7, so I don't know if he's actually watching the game or not. It's that boring.
He's on Tinder, isn't he?
He's doing that. I mean, I know I said you're Chris Kamara, Jace, but it doesn't mean you actually have to go.
I don't know, Jeff, has it? I must have missed that. I don't know, Jeff.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know how they didn't. I mean, seriousness, I do not know how they didn't score that. And again, we're on 72 minutes. I don't know how they haven't scored. And again, you start thinking, is this our night?
What about that stat? Most shots without scoring, and Man City have officially set the most most shots without scoring in this game, 29.
It's almost like you spend £100 million on a player that you didn't actually need because you've already got Phil Foden and you should have bought a striker and you're not scoring goals. Well, shock horror. Well,
Grealish is playing ahead of Raheem Sterling. Need I say any more?
I mean, Sterling gets an unfair rub of the green from Guardiola, I will say that.
I love Sterling. I think he's fantastic on and off the pitch. I think he's a great player.
I don't know how Sterling's not started this game, to be honest. I don't get it. I've said this before. Sterling's got that dynamism and that explosiveness. Grealish offers nothing.
I mean, Raheem Sterling's sitting in 10th spot on 10 goals this season, and you know he's not starting this game. Mind you, saying that, might I add, he was on the bench against Man United, and the last game he started was Everton on the 26th. So, I'm a bit miffed, to be honest. Too much chopping and changing, but then again, that's what comes with a big squad overhaul like Man City. Arsenal then, turning over Leicester. I will say, before I start letting my bias come out a little bit, Arsenal look fantastic. I think there are big questions as to whether Ramsdale has earned himself a shout for England's number one at the moment. I don't think anyone else wants it. I know Southgate will probably keep Pickford because of his performances for England. He's looked shambolic for Everton again this season, Pickford. And yeah, Arsenal just look to be more solid week on week. Now,
I'd like to throw it out there. Sorry to interrupt, but I'd like to throw this out there. There was the Jamie O'Hara, Laura Wood debate last week, wasn't there, about have they overachieved or underachieved? And I think we conclusively said that they have overachieved on the basis of what everyone thought about them going into the season. Tell me this, if this is too far-fetched. I think Arteta should be, if he gets Arsenal top four, for me, forget the Southamptons and the Hasenhüttls, but if we're talking about any big club manager getting manager of the year, I think Arteta should get it. You look on paper with the players that he's getting to play top four. Ramsdale, I joked about for how long when they signed him. I know I'm not the be-all and end-all, but he's come from...
I think everyone joked about it. 30 you know, million quid.
Relegation from Sheffield United, relegated with Bournemouth. And it's very easy to forget, actually. Back in September, a month into the season, and they were terrible. The fans were on Arteta's back. They wanted Arteta out and this, that and the other. And it seems like kind of October came along. And since October up until now, they've been pretty much faultless.
I mean, I think when you think of the Everton loss, they then picked up a run of form, which we thought they were back on. And then they went and lost to Man City, got eliminated from the FA Cup, drew to Liverpool, and then lost to Liverpool in the EFL Cup, and then got a draw against Burnley. And that was back in January. So even after that, we wasn't convinced by them, but it wasn't until they hit this Wolves fixture that they've now gone on a 5-game winning streak. I think they look brilliant, Arsenal. I'm not going to lie. I think they do look fantastic in these recent run of games, and he seems to have certainly got his players to click. You know, the most impressive thing with Arsenal is the fact that, and I think I said this last week or someone said it last week, they're not just showing what they can do now. You're looking at the squad going, this is what they're doing now. What on earth are they going to be doing in the next couple of years? Because these players are nowhere near peak. Saka, Smith Rowe, Odegaard, Martinelli. You know, that is a cluster of players that are, I mean,
they're just enjoyable to watch, aren't they?
They are. They really are.
They're a joy to watch. I dislike Arsenal for many reasons, but what happens on the pitch, you just watch them. You think, do you know what? I'm entertained. You're guaranteed entertainment. You're guaranteed to watch young players just play superbly. And fair play to Arteta.
We laughed at Ramsdale. I don't know what we laughed at more, to be honest. We laughed at Ramsdale and we laughed at Ben White, the 50 million signing. And to see them play the way that they are now, it's certainly an eye-opener, and they deserve all the credit in the world. Big question, and I alluded to this earlier regarding the handball decision, considering it's meant to be clear and obvious. They spent a hell of a lot of time trying to look at every different angle to try and find the evidence of the handball, which begs the question, should it have been given? If you can't find a handball in a minute, I'm sorry, is it a handball? His arm was up, but the frames weren't giving us a clear indication that it was actually causing an issue.
They had to go for 5 camera angles before they found one where it's like, his hand, you know, sometimes your hands are going to be out. I did feel sorry for him, to be honest, even though he'd been slated a lot recently and rightly so, but I felt sorry for him in that decision, to be honest, because it wasn't like he was trying to put it out to block it. It's one of those things that his arm was just lingering there and it touched his, it grazed his knuckles and it got given as a penalty. But as you say, if it's not found within a minute and 2.5 minutes later, we're thinking, oh yeah, just about. This is a bit ridiculous in my opinion.
Yeah. Not to say that that meant Leicester had any right to get anything out of that game. I'm sorry, Arsenal.
No, it would have been 1-0 rather than 2-0.
Destroyed them. Oh, absolutely. It probably would have been 2-0 in the end anyway if they'd not had that. So, yeah, I think it's Arsenal's to lose. Lo and behold, I said at the beginning of the season, and Cookie, I remember, laughed at me.
You all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you?
And now they're like acting like they knew it all along. Do I think they're good enough to stand in the Champions League? No, I don't. But they're better than the teams around them outside of that 3. Bit of investment, however, and they're right up there with Chelsea. I don't think they're anywhere near Liverpool and Man City, but for certain, Chelsea are definitely up for being caught. I feel like we end this on a bit of a downer because we go to one game that is, let's be fair, arguably pointless. I don't know whether to hold on and see if I can drag this out so Jason can directly address Seagull Simon again or not, because obviously
he's woken up now. He's off OnlyFans and falling asleep during his beloved Palace game. But Seagull Simon, that's him straight away.
Let's just get one thing clear, right? We don't even need to talk about him anymore. I'm not even going to mention his Twitter name because they're just a joke. Their form's a joke. Oh, Kiarte's on a burst here. And the one's free. Oh, this is... Oh, man. Right, back to Seagull Simon. I'm giving him free promotion, for Christ's sake. Why am I even mentioning him? No, Brighton have been awful. Like I said, it will catch up with them halfway through the season. And it has.
I've not heard the phrase wankers yet in the sentences that you've just been saying. I'm quite disappointed, actually, Jace.
Can I backtrack on one thing, Jace? Just to sort of clarify what you just said. Are they actually not good enough to sort of finish where they were sitting? Or have they, and let's do them a bit of a discredit if they have gone into a vein of form, have they gone into a vein of form that actually they should never be in?
It was just one of them that, you know, when Leicester won the league, Leicester kept up that vein of form. Everyone was like, it's going to break soon, and it never broke. And with Brighton, it just broke. It was like, to relate it back to Palace Brighton, it was like when we had Alan Pardew, and he had us fourth in December. We were in the Champions League places in December. Then January came. We got to an FA Cup quarterfinal and we finished 17th. We dropped from 4th to 17th in the space of 4 months because, well, I think Bolasie got injured. We obviously had the FA Cup as a major distraction. And, you know, and again, clubs like us, they were overperforming. And that's why we're so confident about it. They were overperforming for the squad that they had. It was an overperformance. There's always one or two kind of mid-table, bottom-half teams that end up pushing the boundaries early doors. And, yeah, it's caught up with them.
Look, we were going back to Villa, right? And Dean Smith, I remember, got sacked off the back of 5 losses in a row. Brighton have suffered 5 losses in a row. And, you know, 3 of those games were Newcastle, Villa and Burnley. Just about positioning those 5 losses in the season, isn't it?
this is a manager who was linked with the Arsenal job when he was doing well. It changes like a light switch.
It does. Costi, in regards to Liverpool in that Brighton game, obviously not a lot to say, to be fair.
How did Brighton finish the game with 10 men with that challenge on Diaz? Didn't VAR said, oh, there was no obvious contact.
That was an awful challenge. He basically took him out. It was a clothesline, wasn't it, from WWE? Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It completely knocked him out. Yeah. I don't understand why that goes to VAR. Like, I don't want players to be sent off for everything. But when you're face high with a player that beat you to the ball, you'd have thought, hang on a minute, that's probably a sending off, regardless of it resulted in a goal, full stop. But yes, a special mention to Diaz. I think he looks like he's been playing in the Premier League for the last 8-9 years, and I don't think he will be the Salah replacement, because of the ongoing contract talks and them stalling from the sounds of it recently. But he looks like one hell of a player. And that there was a clip that was brilliant that Match of the Day highlighted, where Diaz lost the ball and like put his head down and thought, oh shit. And then Klopp was at the side and said, you know, you see him just completely, you know, head straight back up, went back, won the ball, and he didn't let his head drop for the rest of that game. And he looked absolutely fantastic. Yeah, Liverpool are lucky that Spurs didn't tap him up earlier, or, you know, I think other teams were linked with him. And he looks as good as any of Liverpool's front four or five at the minute. And it's got to the point where Jota can't even get into the starting 11. And he's, what, third top goal scorer in the Premier League, if I'm right? Something like that. And yeah, Jota's on the bench now compared with the new boy. That's been there for a matter of weeks.
Which seems a bit harsh, but... that just goes to show the strength in numbers that Liverpool have up top. You know, it's looking very good for them. Just quickly before we move on, without going into it, massive credit for Klopp in his press conference in the past week with what he said and his questioning of the Premier League and what they need to do regarding allowing takeovers. You know, he publicly came out and he slated it. There's one thing that's come out is Tuchel and Klopp have shown themselves in a very good light in the back of all this. So fair play to them both.
They're both brilliant people on and off the pitch. They've got their heads and their hearts in the right place in every single way, to be honest.
Yeah. And we come to the last game before we come to Jace. Let's go to Cossie's. I thought Norwich was his most dreaded segment in this show. I have a feeling it might be this one.
Fair play to Brentford and another shambles that if you want to start getting a bit of confidence and a little bit of momentum, just play Norwich, because then all of a sudden you'll win two in a row, or you'll look good. Or, you know, I think Jay Rodriguez had an incredible chance when it was 0-0 and it hit the bar from about 40 yards out. It could have been goal of the century. It would have been absolutely superb. But Dyche came out after the game saying he doesn't know how we lost that, and I was like, oh, cheers mate, you completely mugged me off and made me look like the twat that I am. So fair play to Brentford. Again, Christian Eriksen's quality, put a good ball into the box 5 or 6 yards out, Tony's going to score it, and again, you give Tony a penalty and he'll score it as well. So tap in Tony and penalty Tony. But if that gets you 3 points, that gets you 3 points. I'm not bitter, yes, I am extremely bitter, but, you know, fair play to him. It's only a little bit of a joke between me and my rants about Brentford, but I still think you're going down. I can take it. I can take it on the chin. I completely take it on the chin.
Look, Brentford win 3-4 and now they've gone and won 2 6-pointers and come away with 6 points in both games.
They've got Eriksen, someone who's got ridiculous talent, a great left and right foot from the looks of it as well, from the cross at the weekend. We were meant to have someone like that in Billy Gilmore, who's shown absolutely nothing. And that's the difference. The recruitment is completely worlds apart. They kept their best player. We sold our best player. Look at the teams around us. They kept their best players. We sold our best players. They win against us. They're on a bit of like a running form, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Leeds win their next game and they're out of it, thanks to Norwich giving them a bit of momentum. But you're welcome, lads.
Well, just quickly, we've talked about Brentford, and we've got Brentford, Leeds and Everton now really fighting Watford to try and stay up. But it wasn't that long ago that we were saying that Burnley had 5 games in hand, look like they're going to be, you know, safe the way they're going. Here they are with only 2 more games left over Watford, and they're still not out of 19th spot. Are you surprised by that?
Yes, I genuinely, well, again, you'll play the clip from last week's predictions. I genuinely thought they were going to go to Brentford and not necessarily turn them over, but I thought, well, an easy 1-0 win, unless if Brentford get a penalty, which they did. Not bitter, again. But yeah, they're looking in trouble again, aren't they? Next week we'll do this show and turn around and be like, oh no, Brentford are going to be fine. Burnley are going to be fine again, and Sean Dyche has got them out of it. But you can't say there's any number of, other than Norwich, there's 5 or 6 teams above them, which you think, well, you wouldn't be surprised if they go down. And Burnley, I thought were going to be fine, but now, again, they're in the shit, aren't they? That's a huge loss. Huge, not just make me look silly, but it's a huge loss.
They've only got 1 point since Crystal Palace on the 26th of February. They then lost to Leicester, lost to Chelsea, lost to Brentford. They've now got Man City next, which is a massive concern. Then they've got the big one against Norwich. And then it's West Ham, Burnley and Burnley Wolves. So, you know, I wouldn't say they're easy games. So they've got a lot to do, but we'll no doubt summarise that briefly. Come on then, let's go over to the man who looks like he's having a heart attack. Come on.
I was going to say, like, we've got to cut to Jason right now.
What's going on, Jason? We've got a minute to go.
There's a bit of afters now. We're in the 95th minute and there was 5 minutes added on, but City do have a throw in near the corner flag. Ball's about to come in. Just bear with me. Ball's in. Guita's caught it. That should be full-time 0-0. Cracking result for Palace. But just before then, Gallagher, through his own improvisation, storms down the right channel, better ball into Zaha. That's just happened in 1-0. Unbelievable. But what a result. 0-0.
That is a great point.
I wasn't quite sure what was happening with you, Jace, because it looked like you were excited, gutted, being pleasured. I couldn't quite make out what was actually happening with everything that was going on in that game with you, Jace.
There was a moment where he had one hand up in the air and I was thinking, where's the other hand? I didn't know what was going on.
His mouth was wide open as well. It looked like he was really enjoying it. I thought, but the thing is, again, he looked quite gutted. So I thought Man City might have even scored a last-minute winner.
I tell you what, we now have a league table that has Man City on 70 points, because we can talk about Man City now. Man City on 70 points with 29 games and Liverpool on 66 with 28 games. Liverpool win that game in hand and they're a point off, and it is... I can't believe there was a 0 after that point not that long ago. It is
exactly
scary.
That's unheard of with Man City, and that's unheard of with Guardiola. So, on behalf of the red side of Merseyside, Jace,
fuck me, thank you.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if you realise what this both means now, but Crystal Palace have taken 4 points from a possible 6 against Man City this season, and kept 2 clean sheets.
I mean, it's not going to give you 10 points or anything, but it is a fantastic stat.
Well, that's 1 point further away from Brighton and another pound from our back pocket for Jason's meal out, isn't it, really?
To be fair to Jace, I mean, that's a point they should never have. They picked up, you know, 4 points this season against a team they should never have had 4 points against.
Why is your keeper and Guardiola having, like, a heated discussion as well? What happened there?
I don't know if he was berating him for time wasting. I'm not too sure. There was a bit of afters after, like,
Jewish... Well, find me a fucking river, Pep Guardiola. Jesus Christ, you've got a £100 million player that's doing fuck all. Maybe look at him rather than look at the goalkeeper taking an extra 5 seconds to take a goal kick, you prick.
Yeah, well, we all know Edison would do it if it was the other way around, don't we? So, you know, it's...
There's big questions to be asked at the end of the day, whether a bit of investment by Man City into the right player, may I add, they would have won this league ages ago. I mean, when you look at the form table, you know, City are on 10 points after 5 games. That's 5 points off Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal. So, you know, they're sinking. That's a bit over dramatic. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're not performing to the levels they should be performing at. And yeah, there's big questions to be asked now going forward, because as we keep saying, you know, City are in the FA Cup. They're in the Champions League and they've now got a bit of a dilemma as to which one they put forward as their priority. And I think I remember saying ages ago, Cost, to you, that City might act like the Premier League's the priority, but that's only because they know they can't win the Champions League. So it'd be interesting how this change of events comes over the next few weeks and how that attitude sort of starts to shape when they have to sort of come out and say, oh, yeah, you know, we put this one ahead of that one and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, when it fits the narrative, boys, when it fits the narrative. So Palace 0, Man City 0. Massive result for Palace. Fair play to them. And like that, the games are done in what's been a busy, busy week for football in general, I will add. That's a good way to end it for Liverpool fans, that's for sure. I know they will be very happy with that Palace result. So on behalf of Merseyside, that's a big thank you to Crystal Palace, I'm sure, Cost. Right, we better go to predictions then. So we've got a bit of an unusual schedule, obviously, because FA Cup interrupts a lot of things. So we've got games left, right and centre. So the way we're going to do it this week is I am giving anyone free rein to pick a game from Wednesday all the way to Sunday. It doesn't matter if the team comes up twice, because I know there are teams that do play twice, but I'm more than happy to give free rein on that one. So from Wednesday to Sunday. If you've got a game in mind, feel free to jump on and go for it.
Leicester Brentford.
I mean,
mark my words.
You could not have two managers there that you you get on their back, could you? Brendan Rodgers and the new. Okay, Leicester Brentford it is. It doesn't look like we're going to have Cookie's predictions this week. It looks like he's actually a bit busy because I asked him ages ago and it's still not come up. So come on in, Leicester Brentford, what are we saying?
Leicester are going to win 3-1.
Is that your head or your heart?
That is you marking my words. Leicester will win that game.
Yeah, I'll join you in a sense that I think Leicester will win. I think it will be 2-1 in that one.
I am going to go for 2-0 Leicester.
Well, my game's going to be either making Liverpool season or not. I've got to go for the big one. Arsenal-Liverpool. It's a big one because if Liverpool don't win, it could be it. Could be it. What are we saying?
I think that's 2-0 Liverpool.
I'm going to go with 3-1 Liverpool. Jace?
I'm going to go 3-0 Liverpool.
Cool. And then your game?
I am going to go for Everton Newcastle, and I am going to say 2-0 Newcastle.
I'm going to go 1-0 Newcastle, please.
So I've gone 3-1 Newcastle. Don't think Everton will get anything out of that. Cookie's not here this week for predictions, so he will be back next week, either having double points or an extra fixture, whatever we decide to do. Big moment then for who's up or down. So, you've got two opportunities to move teams as we hit the 30 game mark. So, there will only be one more after this. Obviously, Cookie's got about 10 teams that he needs to move. So, you've got two more chances before that locks in and you can't adjust it anymore. I'm going to move Wolves up two places from 10th to 8th for me. And I think that will lock them in worst case scenario. I can't see that changing anymore.
I'm in a difficult position because I've got about six teams going down. And at the minute, my bottom three are Burnley, Watford and Norwich. I'm going to go with my heart on the Premier League. So at the minute, I've got Man City top with Liverpool second. I'm going to have Liverpool win the league. Yeah. My other change is obviously Arsenal finishing the top four and then West Ham fifth.
This is going to sound outrageous, but this is how fucked my table is. I'm going to move Everton down two places from 8th to 10th.
What a fucking life, Billy. I don't think you're getting any points from them.
I'm not getting any points for anyone. The state of my table, I've got Everton at 10th, I've got Leeds, well, they were 10th, so they're now like 9th. The rest is fairly okay, to be fair. I've got Burnley, Norwich and Watford as my bottom three.
Well, once Who's Up or Down is locked in, we then will introduce maybe a new segment to the show whereby we will do a TFD bet builder every week. Two bets each to put in a tidy little bet builder acca, so it could be a simple case of either predicting an outcome of a game or saying that one player will get booked in a game or score in a game, doesn't matter. Anything that you deem a chance of building up the TFD bet would be happy days. So we'll try and generate something there off the back of that just to have a bit of fun and see exactly whether we can put our money where our mouths are. So on that note, boys, we are done. It's been a pleasure as always. We will be back next week where we will obviously have the FA Cup to discuss, as well as all the games leading up to the weekend.
Hang on, I'm confused. Lads, before you wrap up the show, you said we have got the FA Cup to discuss.
Yeah, we have got it to discuss.
Who are you playing again?
Doesn't mean who we're playing, mate. The fact is we're discussing it, isn't it?
Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter who you're playing, but what day are you playing?
Look at this guy. Like he gets a point against Man City and he gets right out of his brand. You watch Frank Lampard kick them out of the FA Cup this week, eh? It'll be... I tell you what, Frank Lampard knocks you out of the FA Cup, you're paying for that little full stop. You can fucking do one. I don't know what's worse, finishing below Brighton or getting knocked out of the FA Cup by Frank Lampard.
I will be highly, highly pissed off if we end up... We'll never have a... To be fair, I'll tell you what's going to happen. We're going to beat Everton, then we're going to meet City at Wembley in the semi-final, and they will tonk us 5-6-0. That's what will happen.
Right, boys, on that note then, let's wrap up episode 41, and I will see you next week for episode 42, of course. And in the meantime, don't get up to any trouble, Jace. Especially on that OnlyFans account. Be careful, mate.
Jason, we kept two clean sheets against Man City. Hit me up.
Because I'm not about to keep any clean sheets for you.
On that note.
Bye, boys.
Cheers, lads.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening and keep an ear out for the next episode.